The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening. Here we are again to continue discussing some of the issues in parenting. There are many. Some of them are quite simple and obvious, and some are a little more complicated. But the most complicated part of it all is our kids, and that's really what we have to focus on. I'd like to speak about a few issues that I think are very, very important. One is a close and open relationship with our children. The goal is that we, they, and us can be able to talk about anything. To talk about anything without feeling threatened, without feeling intimidated, without fear of jeopardizing the love and respect that we may have for them. And that's something that's very, very critical. There's a dynamic that's a little bit difficult in this situation, this relationship, because we want them to be open enough with us that they can tell us anything. So first of all, we'll have a sense of what they're doing, and we'll be able to guide them through some of the difficulties that otherwise they might not be willing to admit to us and talk to us about, and not seek adult guidance and experience. So it's very important that they could tell us the things that they're doing, the challenges they have, the questions they have, the mistakes that they've made. Critical. On the other hand, sometimes they do things that we really have to reprimand them about, and we really have to take them to task about and show them that they're making a critical mistake. It's serious. It's wrong. It's forbidden. It's dangerous. It's something that could lead to serious problems. When we do so, we risk something else, because if we tell them what they're doing is wrong or bad or dangerous, it compromises their willingness to talk to us. On the other hand, if we don't tell them what it is that what we think of what they're doing, we may be compromising their safety, their security, their future. So how do we balance that type of letting them know that they're making a mistake without allowing them to feel completely disenfranchised, to feel that they've been put down, to feel that we don't love them or respect them as we had or they would have liked us to? One of the most painful and telling examples of how dangerous reprimand of any sort is the famous Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Dvorim, where Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu apologizes to Reuven on his deathbed and says, "I didn't want to reprimand you before I was about to die, because I was afraid that you'd leave me and lidobik be'esav ochi, to join Esav, my brother." Yaakov was afraid that with the gentle and sensitive teichocha reprimand that he would give, that still this great tzaddik, his son Reuven, might be so hurt by that reprimand that he might leave him and join forces with none other than Esav, the great Rosha. It shows to the extent to which it's so difficult for a person to hear any criticism. So on the one hand, criticism can be very devastating. On the other hand, without registering some sense of the inappropriateness of a child's action, we're misleading them, and we're certainly not taking advantage of an opportunity to guide them and redirect them. So, of course, what's needed is a balance. The balance is almost as if that we can divorce what is wrong from the individual who did it. That the old adage is, you know, criticize the mistake and not the actor, not the person who perpetrated it. But it has to go much deeper than that. We can register a sense of the inappropriateness of what a person did, but make it very clear that in no way does that detract from the love and respect that we have, because people are human, people do make mistakes. The essential thing in mistakes, in fact, mistakes are really, in a sense, opportunities. Oftentimes, a person who makes a mistake has an opportunity to rise to levels that he never would have been able to achieve before. Chazal say, "B'mokum shebalei tshuva omdim, afilo tzadikim gemurim meinam yecholim la'amod." Where balei tshuva, those who have erred and changed and corrected their ways, are on a level, on a pedestal, in a position where even pious people who have never made a mistake in their lives cannot reach, because it's the benefits of having erred and recognizing the mistake and revisiting the issues and directing oneself in the positive direction are something that strengthen the person much more than if they had never had this challenge. This is something that they have to hear. It's in no way justifying what they did. It's no way saying sin so you could do tshuva, make mistakes so you'll have opportunities to grow, because the mistakes, unfortunately, especially in our day and age, are too dangerous and too and sometimes lethal. And therefore, we can't take a chance on the and forbidden. Besides all that, but b'di'evid, after the fact, they have to have this sense that from this mistake they have an opportunity to grow, and certainly this mistake in no way reflects upon who they are, just the fact that they're human. Human beings make mistakes. And the Torah was given to human beings, not malochim, and that's what's to be expected. And the trick is to grow from it. The trick is to recognize it. The trick is to admit it. The trick is to visit all of the issues again and to follow in the proper path. And when we show this to them, together with the fact that our love is just the same, our respect is just the same, and we go out of our way after such a discussion to let them know how much we love them, to let them know how much we still respect them, to let them know how much we respect or how much additional respect we have because they were able to recognize a mistake and come to grips with it and admit it and discuss it, then that sort of puts it in the proper balance where they can feel comfortable admitting their mistakes. We can give them guidance, and we don't jeopardize our relationship with them, and we don't jeopardize their own self-esteem and sense of feeling good about themselves and hurt them and break them and chase them away, and maybe equally bad or maybe worse, prevent them from ever wanting to talk to us again, because it was really a very harrowing experience. Relationships are not only about the mistakes people make. Relationships are about positive things as well. It's extremely important for our children to feel that we seek their advice, we're interested in their opinion, we enjoy their company. We look at them not just as sources of nachas, but as close, as people in a close relationship that want to help each other and want to share with each other. And the more that we communicate with them on that level, there's a fine line between, of course, being your children's friend and being your children's parent. And children want and crave and absolutely need limitations, and they need structure, and they need discipline, although the word discipline really comes from the root, if they have roots in English, of disciple. They need to be taught. The discipline that we do exercise has to be acts of teaching a lesson, not unrelated and just punishing types of action, but rather action that will teach the lesson that will allow them to recognize the mistakes that they've made and to correct them. So it's a balance between the structure that they need and the love and the closeness. The truth of the matter is that with love, in the expression of love and friendship, we can reach beyond anything that one would imagine humanly possible. One of the most graphic expressions of this is a thought that the Ralbag, in his Toelius, in Parshas Vayishlach, where we read about the encounter between Yaakov and Esav. And Esav is returning to Eretz Yisrael, and Yaakov is concerned about it, and he tells him he was with Lavan, he had Tzoyin u'Bokor, and so forth, and he sends a message to him, and the Ralbag says, you learn from here how to melt an enemy. You just show him friendship. Talk to him, I was with Lavan, catch him up to date. Esav thought that Yaakov had fooled him twice already, v'akveni zeh pa'amayim, so like, maybe he's not even going to believe this. And it seems that when there is sincere friendship, and sincere caring, and the person is reaching out to someone, then despite the fact that he may be suspicious, that maybe it's not even true, it still has such a power. It could melt even the heart of such a mortal enemy as Esav. How much more so can our expressions of friendship and caring and sensitivity and respect for our children melt any resistance and any opposition? Stories abound about parents and teachers who have come into the most difficult situations and with love and with respect and with sensitivity to the positions of their children or of their students have been able to turn around antagonism into a very positive, loving, and caring relationship. So this is something that we have to work on. Relationships take time. Relationships don't only take quality time. You know, some people think we can get away with a little bit of quality time. It takes a lot of time. It takes responsiveness. It takes the sense that we are available to our children at all times, even though there will certainly be situations where we cannot respond. I believe that another area which is very, very critical and a very serious mistake that our children and many people make today is not to understand the distinction between happiness and pleasure. Many people feel that what's happiness? To have pleasure. And what's more happiness? To have more pleasure. And all happiness is all about just having a lot of pleasure. And we know that nothing can be further from the truth. We know that happiness is not about that. And if a person feels, has a sense of what happiness is, which has to do with a person feeling osher, the word osher seems to come from a sense of ishur, validation. If they feel good about themselves, they're going to be happy. Pleasure doesn't make us feel good about ourselves. Pleasure makes us feel bad about ourselves. And the more pleasure that we need to compensate for not feeling good, the more ultimately we're really telling ourselves that we have no value, we're not very valid, we don't have much going for us, and therefore it's only a temporary feeling to ease the pain, but it doesn't do anything for my feeling good about myself. And it's very important for us to help our children to feel good about themselves. Now, compliments and encouragement are helpful. It's always good, you know, a compliment, people feel good. But compliments to people who don't feel good about themselves are usually not accepted because I don't think I'm anything. And the compliment is just lip service. You're just talking to me. You're just saying it that way. You're just trying to make me feel good. You don't really mean it. It's not really sincere. We have to find and create opportunities for them to really discover their own self-worth, for them to really recognize that they are worth something. When we solicit their opinion, they begin to think that they have some worth because why are they asking my opinion, especially if once in a while we can follow it too, that I must be worthy of something. When we give them situations in which they can succeed, we have done something for them. Because now they can succeed at something, they've done a task, they've performed, and they can feel good about themselves that they have succeeded in this performance. When we allow them to make choices, they feel better about themselves, they feel more accomplished. Many parents, even at a very early age, have been advised to select two different choices of clothing for the little kids even, you know, young, four or five, whatever it is, six, and put them out for them and let them choose which one they want. The very fact that they have the ability and they have the trust that we trust them to choose, and it should always be between choices that we can tolerate, both alternatives, then they begin to feel good about themselves. I make choices. I have some authority. I have some power. I have some worthiness, and I am being trusted or entrusted by my parents to do certain things, and that creates a greater sense of self-validation and appreciation of oneself. And certainly when it comes to this type of validation, a person certainly has to feel a certain sense of individuality. If I am not given some ability to act as an individual, to act according to the way and the things and the interests and the sensitivities that I have, then I really don't feel much of a person. I feel I'm just part of a massive group. But if I feel that I am, my individuality is respected, and I have certain ideas, and I have certain interests, and I have certain thoughts that are considered significant, considered relevant, listened to, and maybe even implemented, it certainly also gives a certain sense of a greater sense of a person feeling valid, feeling good about themselves, and that's critical to any development. I think that there is a piece here which should be emphasized, and that is that this feeling should be in the spiritual realm as well. In other words, if one is not succeeding in the yeshiva, in the learning, in the yadus, in the Yiddishkeit, then to just find success, which will create a sense of validation in sports or in music or in art or in outside activities, is not going to be enough. Because, and I guess that's good news and bad news at the same time, that our yeshiva kids have been very convinced that the Torah way, that the way of Yiddishkeit is the right way and is the best way and is going to give them the greatest fulfillment in life. And therefore, feeling good about myself in some other way is a minimal substitute. It helps a little bit. It's certainly worthwhile. But it's a minimal substitute for really feeling good about myself in the stuff that really counts, that really has to do with what life is all about and the most important principles of life. And therefore, we must always find opportunities for them to succeed in this area as well. Some maybe are not succeeding in one type of learning. We have to find another type that's more conducive to them. Some may not be succeeding in the academics, so that they will succeed more in emotional areas, in tefillah, in chesed, doing for others. Everybody has to find his place. In the adult world, we have the same thing. We have people in the adult world who are involved in learning and scholarship. People in the adult world are involved in lay leadership on other levels, which has nothing to do with the learning and the scholarship. People are involved in acts of or moistis of chesed. And all of this gives a person a spiritual uplift that I am doing something validating in the area of life that most validates, which is Torah and those things that that really, really count. Pressure is a very, very serious problem that our children have. We hear from them all the time that they're just under too much pressure. That's not the pressure of the dual curriculum. It's the sense of sincerity that they have, the sense of tmimus, that the purity that they believe they have to do everything right. Younger kids, and even the older kids, even the kids that have, I found, even the kids that have veered from a life of Torah, deep under it is the fact that I really know that I have to do everything right, and it's very difficult to do everything right, so I might as well give up altogether. And it's very important to make whatever efforts we can to reduce the pressure. Screaming and yelling at kids to do things doesn't really help. Forcing them to do things doesn't really mean much. Inspiring to do things, educating to do things, even encouraging and rewarding, those are positive things. You know, when you force a kid to do something, I don't even know if there's any credit for it. That's not mitoch shelo lishmo. Mitoch shelo lishmo bo lishmo, that if it's done not for the proper motivation, then it will lead to doing it for the proper motivation. That means that if I offer you a candy and I say, I want you to do this mitzvah to get the candy, so I want to do the mitzvah in order to get the candy. That's mitoch shelo lishmo bo lishmo. But when I'm a gun at my head, I'm being forced, I'm being threatened, so that's not mitoch shelo lishmo. I really don't want to do it. I'm not even doing it willfully. I'm not even doing it. I'm being forced into it. And that isn't a very healthy motivation, education, if you will, bribery in a nicer little, maybe in a nicer sense, not to be put that way, but that's the stuff that really motivates people to want to do it. Another thing that certainly motivates people to want to do and to reduce the pressure is to have a sense of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. It's extremely important that our children have a sense of the benefits of a life of Torah mitzvahs. The burdens that they pick up early on, but the benefits, the quality of life that it gives me, how it gives me meaning and purpose in my life, and what is in fact the purpose of creation, that Hashem created a world just to be able to do chesed, just to be able to give us opportunities to perfect and purify ourselves so that we become better people and we become more worthy of reward, that He can benefit us with that reward in this world and eternally beyond this world. And that's really what it's all about. And it's all about developing myself, perfecting myself, becoming a better person, and being worthy of Hashem's chesed. And in becoming a better person really lies a deep secret of happiness. Because if happiness is about feeling good about myself, it's about validation, if it's osher, that sense of ishur, that sense of validation, then what is more validating than the fact that I'm perfecting myself? I'm becoming a better person. Daily, every day, I've been uplifted and molding myself in a more positive direction. And it's something I feel good about myself because I have made myself into a better person. And that's really the purpose of everything. So all of the mitzvahs, Chazal say, Lo nitno teiro mitzvahs el letzarif ben esabriyos. The whole purpose for Torah mitzvahs was to purify us. And a person who feels that he's purifying himself with the observance of the mitzvahs, he feels that he's doing something positive, he's improving himself, he feels good about himself, it's making him happy, and he's also doing that which is ultimately going to bring him even more and more happiness and reward. So that positive sense helps to reduce pressure. Tension creates pressure. It's a serious mistake that parents make when they believe that what I hold in my heart and don't say, my children don't understand. We know that kimayim ponim el ponim kein lev ha'odom el ha'odom. Just as when a person looks into a mirror, looks into a body of water and sees his own reflection, human hearts reflect off each other as well. And especially our children, they can read our minds and our hearts. And if we're turning around and biting our tongues at their shortcomings and really just trying not to explode and scream, but in reality I'm overwhelmed and I'm seething at your lack of compliance or your lack of appropriate action, this is a very, very detrimental thing because it's communicated. They know, they can tell, we can't fool them. They may be able to fool us, but we can't fool them. And therefore we have to actually learn to find the good in what they do, to reduce the pressure, to gear our expectations, not just our demands, but our expectations to realistic goals and realistic accomplishments and realistic achievements that we can realistically hope and expect from them, rather than to want so much. And that wanting and that desire creates a pressure, whether we articulated it or not. And the truth of the matter is, for most of us as parents, if it's inside in the kishkes, we will articulate it at one occasion or another. And at that time and in that way, we can literally destroy our children. They feel such a pressure. They want to please. They want to do what's right. They don't want to compromise. You know, it's maybe not so complimentary to the adult generation, to us. But, you know, adults, you know, we know, we know we're not perfect and we're not going to be perfect. And we've figured out how to adjust without feeling too much pressure, adjust to our shortcomings and to a life of mistakes and not living up to the standard. The kids don't have that. It's a very deep-rooted tmimus, and unless we could help and ease and the pressure on them, we're going to create a pressure cooker, which you know eventually could explode. Sometimes the calm with which we can discuss mistakes and shortcomings or discuss what we want from them can also reduce pressure. If we talk about it with too much passion, if we talk about it with too much insistence, if we talk about it too tense about the discussion, you know, the way like I can't, the way you're davening or the way you're not davening, it just creates, it's too overwhelming. When they have too much pressure, they're going to run outside, and if you run after them with the pressure, they're going to run further and further until they get away from it. So we have to, it's calm. Whatever we talk about matter-of-factly. We convey the message of the seriousness without conveying that emotional overwhelming passion, because although passion can be inspiring and positive passion in receptive audiences can be very helpful, but when they're having trouble with something or they're not yet up to a certain level and we express too much passion and too much intensity, it becomes overwhelming. And it's a very, very important balance to try to strike. Because what we have heard, what we hear from kids that are in trouble today, and as we say, off the derech, we find that the pressures have really been enormous. The expectations are very great. You know, Taryag Mitzvahs is just the beginning. There's so many halochas and there's so many demands, and then parents oftentimes add to it their own personal chumras, which may be beyond what's necessary, but certainly maybe beyond what the kids can tolerate. And then you're again in trouble, and too much. It just part of the success that we've experienced in today's world in terms of the Torah community becoming the establishment and the sizes of our schools and the level of frumkeit that we've achieved and the opportunities to do so much have created this additional pressure and reduced tolerance. And those two factors, pressure and reduced tolerance, are oftentimes just chasing our kids away. Kids love to be cool. They love to talk to cool people. Part of cool, I guess it means many things, I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it's easygoing. It's not too intense. It's too intense for me. It's overwhelming. They get overwhelmed very easily. And we have to, you know, constantly take that into consideration. We also have to, and this is really another discussion for another time, but we also have to measure their pressure. If we see that the pressure is too much, they need someone who could help them to release the pressure. Oftentimes the parent or the Rebbe or whoever the school that put them under the pressure would be best to be the vehicle to release it, but oftentimes they can't because they've put them under it. They don't have they're the source of the pressure. They're the problem in a sense. So we have to call in additional help to help reduce the pressure. Sometimes another mechanech, a consultation with someone who is not the direct one responsible for their chinuch, might help. Sometimes we need professional help. And if we feel the pressure has gone to the level of anxiety, it's overwhelming, then you know we need outside help. But these are, I think, important points to keep in mind if we wish to assure that we shouldn't overwhelm our kids and you know chase them out the door. Just before we end, I just want to mention that this Sunday night is the Priority One Parenting Expo. It's taking place at the Holiday Inn at the airport, JFK Airport. It's from 6 to 10. There will be some special presentations, a presentation by Dr. David Pelkovitz, by Rabbi Yaakov Bender. There will be workshops that parents can attend with different professionals and mechanchim on different topics. It should be of benefit and of interest to all parents. That's this Sunday, November 16th, from 6 to 10.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority.org. priority-1.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.